And okay. Speaking of boners, but not really, I have to pee before we start, so.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest Mark Sherman is back. You might remember him as our Marvel Netflix binge buddy. We're here to talk about Daredevil Season 2, spoilers ahead.
We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hello.
And Molly Glover.
That's me, I'm Molly Glover.
And today we're joined by our Marvel Netflix binge buddy, Mark Sherman.
Hello.
Returning guest,
Mark. Marvel Netflix binge buddy.
We're going to talk about Daredevil Season 2.
When they invite Mark over to Netflix and chill, they really mean, like, Netflix.
Literally. And
it's,
chill.
It's actually not very chill. It's very, like,
intense.
Efficient.
No, it has to be intense. Otherwise, we're all going to pass out.
It's like Netflix and snacks.
Yeah. Netflix and, like, no rest for the wicked.
Right. Netflix and harass the cats.
Yeah.
There's some cat harassment. If you haven't seen the second season of Netflix series Daredevil, we're going to spoil it.
Spoil the shit out of it.
Hopefully by now you're either pausing it to go get caught up or you don't give a fuck about spoilers.
I need to remember to tag these episodes and have a tag that's just spoil the shit out of it.
Yeah, I like that. You need some paper. Tim's frantically looking around for a note.
So season one ends with Daredevil in his fancy new costume from Melvin putting Kingpin away and Vanessa, his Kingpin's wife, fleeing the country, yep. More or less.
And she's dying?
Right? No, she was poisoned by Owsley.
That's right, they fix her poisoning, mm-hmm. and now she's okay.
But she's on the lam, because she has presumably some of his money, or
whatever.
Just call
her Mint Jelly.
Because she's on the lam.
She's on the lam.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so
it's gonna be that kind of an episode.
The new season starts up with Murdoch and Nelson.
It's been about a month.
I think
it's been significantly.
I think it's been.
It's the heat of summer. I know that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the last one ended like as fall was beginning. I'm not 100% certain.
It was hard to tell because it felt like they kept. Seemed like sometimes they were talking about it like it had just been a little while, and it seemed like sometimes it had been longer.
Well, it's less than a year, though.
It's unclear.
Less than a year. Enough for the Legend of Daredevil to kind of spread around a bit.
Yep.
And
long enough for Nelson and Murdoch to have a reasonably good reputation among the community.
Yeah. Enough time for Kingpin to take over a prison.
True.
You know, which is something that kind of happens about they reveal halfway through the season.
My mom started watching Daredevil like a week ago, and she watched all of the first season very quickly because she loves Vincent D'Onofrio. She was very excited about Kingpin.
Yeah.
So then she starts watching season two, and I just get this text from her that says, "No Kingpin in season two? 18 question marks. And I just wrote back, "Just keep watching." And she's like, "So there is Kingpin?" And I'm like, "I'm not going to say anything, Mom. Come on." And, and then later she was like, "You lied. He is."
So the two big additions this season are John Bernthal as Punisher, and I forgot the actress's name that plays Elektra.
That's because she's a girl and it's irrelevant.
No, it's because I'm familiar with John Bernthal's work. Yeah.
Isn't her name like Hot Stuff Greek name or something? Like, that's right. I'm the misogynist in this room.
Elodie Young.
I was close.
You're super close.
Her name is Elodie?
ELODIEYUNG.
Wow, like Melody spelled wrong without the M.
Like if you had a really thick, like,
it's
old British accent.
Elodie.
Yeah.
Sing a bit of the Elodie.
Right. She is kind of the crazy ex-girlfriend. Boy, in the comics, he Matt Murdock has, like, a pretty terrible dating record.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a love him and leave him. Like, he's kind of a dick to women. Well, it's not, for reasons.
It's
but...
not all his fault. A lot of them die That's horribly.
True.
Yeah.
That's true.
A lot of his love interests get fridged.
There's that deaf girl he fucks for a while, too, right?
Yeah, she gets sort of fridged. She's technically, that's his wife.
Yeah, she gets turned crazy by
comic books.
By comic books and and then put in an asylum after she tries to attack some people.
It sounds like the cover of a novel that like Steitler would post on my wall.
Yeah, yeah.
That would seem judging a book, you know, like driven crazy by comics.
Somebody going into an asylum in a Marvel comic? Yeah. That doesn't make any sense at all.
But
she'll probably stay in an asylum in Marvel.
Yes, well, true. I don't know. Everyone breaks out and, you know, that's... But,
she'll come back as a supervillain at some point.
Yeah, John Bernthal is fantastic as the Punisher. He's Frank Castle.
Yeah,
it was a really good choice. I felt like
he had the right physicality for the role. He wasn't too big, but he's got kind of the right broken face for.
He looks like he's been punched a lot.
Yeah.
Also, unlike Tom Jane, and I love Tom Jane. It's not Tom Jane's fault, but unlike Tom Jane, this Punisher always punished.
Yeah, right.
That was my biggest argument with the Tom Jane movie of Punisher was mm-hmm. there were times when the Punisher had bad guys tied up and he would yell at them a bunch and then he would leave them tied up and nobody got punished, let alone killed. Yeah. And it's like, that's...
They fixed a lot of that with the Ray Wise film, which is highly underrated.
The Warzone?
Yeah.
I never saw it.
Honestly, it's balls crazy.
Right.
Like, it's just absolutely insane. The guy that plays Jigsaw, Dominic something, West, maybe?
Uh-huh.
I can't remember. He's great. And that guy who was in Green Mile who wound up marrying that weird, like, 15-year-old, like, Courtney Stott.
This is like getting directions from my mom.
It's not helping.
It's like, go to the deli that used to be there and then turn left and go past the old park.
The guy that was in that one movie that married that girl.
Yeah, I'm having some
problems. I'm bad
it's
with
right,
that.
But it's a good movie.
Yeah,
it's great. It's very insane. And
so John Bernthal
is
the best Punisher.
Marvel Netflix, much like the rest of the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is not as much about capes and masks and costumes and secret identities, though Daredevil is like the one big exception.
I expect Spider-Man will be too.
I think so. We'll see how Civil War goes. That could set... Mm-hmm. That might go one way or the other with Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So Bernthal has to be a... realistic Punisher, which is a monster, really.
Yeah.
I mean, a realistic Punisher is a spree killer.
He's a spree killer with a code, which is worse. Because he's not just killing for fun.
Yeah.
He has a personal code, so he feels like... I've always thought that the scariest villains were the ones that thought they were doing a good thing.
Sure.
You know, like,
lawful evil.
Yeah, a lawful evil villain, Vader. I mean, a lawful evil villain thinks that they have the right of things and that murdering is the smart thing. And I love that whole that rooftop chimney chained up conversation.
Oh,
the whole
man.
You know, the difference between you and me is you don't go far enough.
Your half measures.
And look what it's gotten us. Your half measures have led us to this city where the crime...
It's worse than it was.
You got rid of the kingpin and now everything's worse. Yeah.
Before the series debuted, Mark, I know you and another friend of ours, Colin, were talking about a moment from the, 2000 run of Punisher where Daredevil is chained up on a rooftop to a chimney, and very similar scenes happens in the Netflix series. And as it was happening, I was just like, "Oh my God, they're doing it!" And they
teased it a little bit in one of the trailers because it's good cinema. I mean,
It's
really good action on there. But the whole conceit is, you know, Daredevil's given a choice: either you let the Punisher murder someone in front of you, or you stop him with a bullet.
Yeah.
And that's just the ultimate dilemma for a character like Daredevil, mm-hmm. who just cannot cross those lines.
And it's a great way for the Punisher to hammer home to Daredevil, this is the choice I always make. Every time I pull the trigger, mm-hmm. I'm choosing to kill someone to you know, to save a life or to avenge a life taken.
I love that whole tell him what you did. He thinks you're a good guy. He thinks all you did was run the books or whatever, or run some errands. Tell him what you did, because he needs to hear it. And then Daredevil being like, no, oh no, like you could see, and he was like, fuck, I believed this guy.
Yep.
Like I just believed that he didn't do anything wrong and that he hadn't killed any. Yeah, it was good.
It's a great scene, and it leads up to one of the best fight scenes in the show.
Oh, yeah, more hallway fights,
which is you know like kind of a. I mean, there are a lot of best fight scenes in this particular.
I think. Yeah. Well, in the first season, that one.
Well, I mean, in this season.
Yeah.
In the first season, there's the hallway fight, and there's some other good action sequences. Yeah. But that hallway fight is like
iconic.
Just fucking brilliant.
So
good. In this one, there's a lot of because they mirror that hallway fight at least twice.
Yeah.
They do it once. They do it once with Daredevil in the stairs, and then they do it with. The Punisher in jail.
Yeah,
and
that then they prison do it again
fight. When the Punisher's been kidnapped by the Irish dudes at after the setup at the carousel, when Daredevil is shown up to save the Punisher.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's like a underground hallway, like back and forth, in and out of the camera fight that they do.
When Daredevil shows up to save the Punisher, also known as me going, just don't kill the dog, just don't kill the dog, just don't kill the dog.
Well, and the dog is a.
They didn't
a
kill
line
the dog.
Too far.
Well, the dog is the Punisher's last line of defense dog, Max, from the comics.
Yeah. Oh, which cool.
I didn't realize until someone online had mentioned it.
Yeah, I didn't pick that up until later.
But it's totally a semi canon.
Someone told me that was John Bernthal's actual dog, but I don't think that's real. I don't think that's right.
That'd be neat.
It'd have to be a well-trained dog to be an acting dog.
Yeah. That's why I was like, I don't know, man. Like, that's acting dogs are a whole thing.
That stairwell fight where the Daredevil is at the top of the stairwell fighting his way down through an entire gang of the Dogs of Hell.
With the chains.
So the Dogs of Hell are a connection to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They fight the California chapter of the Dogs of Hell, like biker gang, in one of the first season episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's pretty cool.
So it was kind of a neat little tie-in.
That is cool.
One of the first times they've directly connected to the non-movie Marvel stuff, I think. I don't know that they've done that in either of the two other shows so far.
So something I was a little, I don't want to say disappointed, but like surprised that they didn't do was Karen's character really had no development. The whole show, Karen was upset and traumatized by the dude she killed that she hasn't told anyone about yet and never did. I mean, her only development, and I don't want to be all Bechdel test, but her only development was that she started a relationship with Matt. And sort of.
She was tired of his. It's the usual superhero girlfriend thing.
Yeah.
I'm tired of your lies. What are you hiding from me?
Right. I'm a superhero. Yeah. Oh my god. But like, and I'm glad he told her. That was good. But at the same time, I thought that there was going to be something when he told her, okay, so I'm Daredevil. Here's the mask. And I know that's kind of where it ended. But I was expecting somewhere before that, when they started their relationship, some kind of like, so I killed this guy, that guy that they found me with. I killed him. Kingpin made me kill him. I need to talk about this. Like, I'm fucked up. And
didn't
they
she
just
willfully kill him? Didn't she?
She did.
I think,
he made her kill him in that way of putting her in the situation. And it was like, you know, I mean, you could say he, I guess you could say like he checkmated her into it
or
something.
Me or
but,
him sort of.
But I was shocked that they set her up those first few episodes with so much like tremulous PTSD, anxiety, and then that never got resolved.
Some family history that they intimate that
they're still
clearly waiting to. But it felt like they were so focused on what they were doing with Elektra's character,
which was great.
They didn't have enough resources to focus on more than one female character at a time.
that's difficult. I mean, you know, you've got all these men.
Yep.
That you need to focus on, and you really can only in that situation have the one woman. And,
it makes sense.
And you've got the DA character, and she's a woman.
Oh yeah, and you know, Punisher's got a dead wife and a dead daughter. I mean, that's two women right there. We got to look at.
The was it Reyes?
Yeah, Reyes.
Reyes. She was great
because she was in.
Jessica Jones. Jessica Jones. That's right.
And even made mention of Jessica Jones in the show.
She's one of those people who is like doing wrong for the right reasons.
Exactly. Yep.
You know,
well, I don't know. Is political gain really right reasons?
Well, it feels very selfish. Yeah, she was very selfish, but she was trying to achieve something positive.
Her corruption was to put bad guys away.
She perceived it. Yeah.
And then she
positive.
Fucked up and, like, broke every law she could to hide her fuck up.
And she was also sort of picking and choosing who the bad guys were for non specific reasons.
Yeah. That's the thing is, again, I bet that even up until she got shot in her office, she was saying, I had hard choices to make and I made the right call. Tim is right.
Yeah,
she thought she was doing the right thing.
She's always finding a way to justify her actions. She always feels like she is doing right. And so I don't think there's ever a moment where she regrets her actions. There may be moments where she regrets the results.
Interesting. You know, that could be a theme for the whole season if you think about it. Yeah. Every single person, every single character thought that they were doing the right thing, even if it meant they had to do it the wrong way. Daredevil, you know, does things that always said he wouldn't do. Punisher, obviously. Well, Karen with hiding what she says.
With Matt, it's not even necessarily the Daredevil stuff. It's how he's fucking up every other aspect of his life.
Yeah. And Elektra, too. Elektra is all about, and Stick, they're all about, like making
doing the right thing the wrong way.
Doing the right thing the wrong way, and or even like doing the wrong thing, but for what they consider the right reasons.
Yeah, a partial justice.
It was a lot of gray morality this season.
That's kind of like the theme of Daredevil and Punisher for that matter.
Catholicism.
Daredevil is that conflicted character doing. Feels like he has to break the law because he's got this enormous respect for the law, and yet at the same time he doesn't feel that the law can accomplish certain things, that he can accomplish those things, and then he's racked with guilt because what he's doing is technically illegal and wrong, but he feels that he has to do it.
So the scene with Karen and Matt before she knows about the fight they have about Daredevil.
Yeah.
When she says something about Daredevil and he's like, oh, you think Daredevil is, you know, is bad or whatever? And she's like, yeah. Like, she thinks he's good. He's being Matt Murdock, anti-Daredevil.
She's being the devil's advocate.
Yeah. But then, so, like, they have, like, a big fight, and he's kind of a dick to her.
Yeah.
Like, with his negation of his other self, which I think speaks volumes about the cognitive dissonance of Catholicism and how he separates himself from Daredevil and is able to, like, look down on that part of himself.
He's also using his lawyer powers to cast a smoke screen, you know?
Well, sure, but I honestly don't think it's just a smoke screen. I think he does have that duality of self. Sure.
No, I think you're right, he does.
He
would prefer not to be Daredevil and not to need to be a vigilante, you know, it's...
So when he shows her that mask, I would have loved for her to just be like, oh, fuck you, man. Like, she's like, fuck you.
Maybe that's the opening scene of the next season.
You can just fuck off. And she just turns on her heel and it's like...
I feel like the show was divided into three parts, like three acts, like a beginning, middle, end. And the beginning is... the introduction of the Punisher and the Punisher's rampage and the Punisher versus Daredevil.
And his trial.
Mm-hmm. It's very much those two. Mm-hmm. Then the middle part is the trial of the Punisher, the reintroduction of Wilson Fisk, Kingpin, and his new, like him growing into the role of being the Kingpin of crime.
And the first time I think on camera he ever actually self-applies the name Kingpin, which was a great moment that I yelled.
Yeah, we all went, hey!
And then the third act of the third part is the hand. Mm-hmm.
Hand.
I loved all three parts if you divide it up like that. I really, really did. I love D'Onofrio as Fisk, and the jail, the prison stuff with him is so phenomenal. I have a prison orange, an actual prisoner uniform.
You bought it for a costume we ended up not doing a couple years ago.
Yeah, and now
I can totally do Wilson Fisk. He's just gonna. Shaving your head.
It's he's happening.
Gonna. Yeah. He's shaving it all down, much to my chagrin, but it's gotta happen with the shit costume.
And
he looks like a boiled egg, but it's worth it.
It's true.
It's spot on.
Yeah. But the Punisher in prison has been a thing that's happened in the comics a few times. But the third part with the hand, they started to introduce some of the magic, mystical stuff, side of Marvel, which they, until, as we record this today, until the Doctor Strange trailer drops tonight, there really hasn't been a ton of magic in Marvel.
They've been actively trying to ignore the magical stuff or pretend it's science.
Is the Daredevil stuff, and or the hand stuff, I should say, is that Kunlun or is that just Iron Fist?
That is, so the hand stuff...
Probably. Hand stuff every time I say that. Magical so, hand stuff was my high school nickname.
All right. I got a hand job on Daredevil. Anyway.
All right, so the things involving the hand in the series, in the comic series, as well as the stuff involving Iron Fist, kind of both got their origins around the same time when Marvel was heavily looking for anything else to appropriate into their comic books.
Yeah.
And in the 70s, that was blaxploitation films and kung fu. And to a certain degree, that also...
Therefore, the Defenders.
Yeah, and also went into things like the ninjas. They were just plumbing everything. And and Frank Miller with his obsessions and whatnot also
and
led
everyone's
to a
on
lot
cocaine
of,
and...
A lot of that. So not entirely related to one another. One is definitely Chinese-based in origin. Would be the Kunlun stuff and the Iron Fist. And then you've got all the Japanese stuff that popped up in Daredevil. They cross paths in the comics. They're certainly not
What
friendly.
Is the hand stuff called? Is it do they just say Japan? Or do they actually have some other name of like mystical land?
They're based out of Japan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's more of a daimyo situation. Like
ninja. I mean, they're totally... Based on ninja, legends
ninja
about ninja.
The origins of all of that starts to get a little fuzzy in my brain.
Ninja cult.
At some point, they're a ninja cult that started before the Yakuza, and then they run part of the Yakuza. But they're not entirely the same.
Which makes sense with that scene where they're all, because they're all wearing the ties and the suits.
Yeah.
And then when the guy says, like, we're so sorry, you know, like, to have just let down the Yakuza.
He's getting ready to get his finger
cut
off.
Yeah, and he's like, what makes you think I'm Yakuza? And then, dead. That was great. Them wrapping the string and then getting the fucking swords through the chests was so great.
So the head hand guy in this, Mr. Hiroshi, is the guy that introduces Lady Bullseye in the comics. The female hand counterpart to Bullseye. I thought that was neat. He's a character from the comics. He's a guy that introduces some people. I'm really surprised that they didn't try to shoehorn in Bullseye this season.
Yeah,
I'm glad they didn't.
Too much, yeah.
The nice thing is it's a 13 episode season. I gotta say, by the way, I thought it was 12, and the only reason that was frustrating is like I was up really. It took me about a week to watch the whole series. You guys all watched it, like binged it in one day.
Yeah.
And I'm like watching it over a week, and it's like 1 a.m, and I'm watching episode 10 and thinking that it's like 2 more episodes, and I'm like, fuck it, I'm just gonna power through them and get it done.
Yeah.
And then I saw it was 13 episodes. I was like, son of a bitch, I can't stay up that late. I'm gonna have to stop.
Yeah.
And that was very frustrating. So, but the nice thing about a 13 episode arc, and it being Netflix, an hour long episode is actually an hour. There's no commercial.
Right. Yeah.
So
they're like 56 to 64.
They vacillate a little bit. I think one of them was like 45, but they go
but,
on.
But if you bring in multiple villains or multiple character arcs, it doesn't feel like you're doing too much in one story. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have theoretically brought in Bullseye, and I don't feel like it would have felt depending on how you told the rest of the story, it wouldn't have necessarily felt like you had been giving, you hadn't given enough time to the other characters. But I mean, I'd be awfully surprised if Bullseye isn't part of next season.
I think we'll see some Bullseye next season. And I think there's probably going to be, at least I'm hoping that there's some Daredevil interacting with the hand as like being, seduced to join, because that's pretty prevalent in the comics, is the whole, like, join us, be part of us. You would be an amazing addition, a leader of the hand.
That Mr. Hiroshi guy is the guy that first offers the hand to Matt and says, you know, rather than fight against...
Daredevil, would you like a hand job?
Rather than fight against the hand, you could lead us and use our resources for a greater good.
Like you could point us like a gun against
when Daredevil turns them down, they give control of the hand to Wilson Fisk.
And again, that's another example of, you know, right things the wrong way. The hand have a distinct moral code. They are trying to accomplish good and bring about order in the way they see fit.
What they perceive as good.
Right. So here's something to talk about. That kid in the jar, right? What was that?
Fucking, like, human-sized canopic jar or whatever?
Yeah, so what happened to that kid? Because then didn't they put Elektra in that jar at the end?
I think all of those kids either got murdered or they were involved
blood
in
sacrifices
that.
Sacrifices or something.
Because there was a little kid at the beginning. Not just
the first season.
Season. He was... Yeah. What was that kid that they referenced him?
That kid is basically the equivalent, a newer equivalent of what Elektra was. She was the... Was it the Black Sky? That kid in the train car chained down.
Yeah.
He was a Black Sky that they were bringing in to try and indoctrinate and lead the hand.
Okay, so that kid's probably dead.
Oh, he's totally dead.
Okay.
The stick killed him.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got Elektra is Black Sky, and she's in the weird canopic jar with the resurrection Lazarus pit.
And, like, the blood of a whole bunch of...
The blood of all those weird, junky trust fund kids that they kidnapped off the
street.
Clearly,
like,
and...
demon-possessed or something. I'm so glad that they, without actually saying it or explaining it, they have established that the hand ninjas are undead.
Magical.
Or a magical, or...
Yeah.
Like, this guy's already been autopsied. That doesn't make any sense. Like, because he's a fucking zombie.
I can't hear a heartbeat or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, they must have something interfering with their He's like, I don't know what it is. He must be wearing something masking his heartbeat.
You can't hear a heartbeat, but they still breathe. Well, whatever.
Well, that could just be the expansion and contraction of the body as they move. I mean, it doesn't have to be like living breath.
What was weird was just, it was one of the, there's every now and then, and I like that it's pretty consistent, because every now and then, Matt Murdock says something that's so fucking stupid that I want to just be like, are you blind? Because he's like, they must be wearing something that masks their heartbeat because they know I can hear it. No, dumbass, they don't have, fucking Occam's razor, why doesn't your brain think, do they not have heartbeats? How hard is it? Nothing else you've ever encountered has masked your hearing abilities.
Or, as far as inconsistencies like that go, one or two that I kind of bothered me was sometimes Matt Murdock has like radar sense, and other times he apparently does not have like a radar sense, and he's relying on just enhanced hearing, enhanced smell, and all that, and there's not this other sense that he has. But sometimes things are happening around him and he can, you know, catch an arrow or know that someone's walking around the corner or whatever.
Yeah.
And he can, he has like this 3D, you know, echolocation or whatever. And then other times he doesn't. It was, there was a couple times when they seemed to conflict how his powers work. And it's nitpicky. It's not.
They kind of sometimes do that in the comics too.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah. Well, it's powers at the expense of telling a decent narrative.
Right.
Well, and to some degree, I mean, if his powers are based on kind of an enhanced hearing and senses and receptions, you know, there is potential that it could be, you know, it could come and go.
Mm-hmm.
That it could be, you know, that there could be, you know, ebb and flow. Like, there's days when, you know, you have eye strain and you can't see it. Maybe you don't see as well. Or, you know, there's, you know, I don't know. Like, you have a cold, you can't taste. I don't know. There may be some kind of weird.
Sure. They've mentioned in the comics that he has to focus to get some of those other things. So it's possible he's distracted.
He doesn't have his mana reserves are low.
Yeah, right.
He needs to drink a chi potion.
Oh, I've got a bad case of plot convenience-itis.
A bad case of plot convenience is a fantastic, like, the plot.
That sounds like something Deadpool would say.
Right.
Yeah.
For sure. So they haven't said there's going to be a third season yet because Defenders starts shooting at the end of this year. And Defenders is going to be Luke Cage, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Iron Fist. We get Luke Cage later this September 30th, I think. And then we'll get more of everything else and some Iron Fist and then Defenders. Yeah. And then after Defenders, we'll see if we get more Daredevil or where the whole universe goes by then. But that'll be about...
We're getting season 2 of Jessica Jones.
Yeah. But that'll be Infinity War time. Sure. And who knows if they're going to bring in any of these guys. Oh, Charlie Cox has said he's interested in being Daredevil for any of the movies. Yeah. as they get to that point.
God, I love Charlie Cox. He's just so perfect. He's really good. So fucking perfect.
Did they say, I thought I saw that they're talking about a Punisher series as well.
No? Yeah, it doesn't sound like they're really going for it.
There's a lot of rumor and a lot of demand. I don't think they should.
I think what happened was somebody was like, somebody asked Jon Bernthal, like, would you do it or would you be interested if they did it? And, like, he was like, sure. And that became the way that, like, not news can become viral news these days. Sure. Like,
well, you know, there's such a weird moral line that you cross if you do a Punisher show the right way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know? Oh, yeah. I don't know if there should be a Punisher series where he is the hero.
You need that Daredevil character to contrast with the Punisher.
Yeah.
Although, really... they did maybe hint at Microchip.
Which is great, yeah.
The very end when he pulls that CD out that says Micro and the DVD behind the picture frame, Microchip is his...
His tech buddy?
Yeah, his... the weasel to his Daredevil to Deadpool rather.
He's Q in a lot of
movies. Yeah, he's just Q, right. And so who knows, maybe we'll get more Punisher with, you know,
I would think with another season of Daredevil we might see the Punisher again.
I'd like to see the Punisher crop up in the background of all the Defenders stuff.
I was just gonna say he could easily be like a one or two episode Defender villain where like they he's behind something. But is he in prison?
At the end of this, he's out of prison, right?
Yeah.
I love, and I know we gotta go to five questions. Yeah. The one thing that I wanted to say that I really loved was the way Fisk manipulates the Punisher, the way he understands the Punisher's character, and he can use that against him. And when he basically says to the Punisher, "I was able to use your own weakness against you," that doesn't change who he is for a second. Yeah. There's never a moment where he goes, now I'm realizing how my behavior can be used to service this asshole that I absolutely hate.
His thought is, if only I had killed that asshole before he tricked me.
Yeah, his code is his code. Yeah.
Yeah. It was nice. It was good to see that difference between like the way he deals with Kingpin and the way the one meeting that Matt Murdock has with Kingpin, which that was an interesting one too. I almost wanted to see, and I don't know, you know, it's like how did they write it, but I wanted to see that scene where it's like at the end of it, you really get the feeling that Kingpin's terrorizing, really scaring the hell out of Murdoch.
Yeah.
But I wanted to see him walk out of that room, you know, breathing heavy and having his heartbeat heavy, and have him walk out of that room and just calm down and have you go, no, Daredevil. It's like, whatever, fuck this guy. I've beaten the shit out of this guy, but as Matt Murdock, I had to be afraid of him.
Real quick before we go to five questions, everyone, a favorite scene or a favorite moment? Molly?
I think my favorite moment was the fact that I totally called exactly when Elektra would show up about 10 minutes before. Because I was like, he's going to go home and it's going to be like, he's going to be in, he's going to like, I don't know, pour himself a beer or something. And then he's going to be like, or something, or he'll just go, hello, Elektra. And she's going to be in his apartment. And then it happened and it was dope.
Mark?
I really liked Clancy Brown and how they really wrapped up Punisher's story arc with giving him that uncompromising personality in the war that led him to becoming enemies with his unit and not being involved in all of this. It's a really good way to just wrap that all up and tie a neat little bow on it and push him over the edge.
That's especially all, after the Clancy Brown and the trial.
Well, and the whole that's all here. Isn't that all hearsay? Oh, well, do you remember the guy I mentioned that lost his arm?
Yeah,
that was me.
Yeah.
Damn, bitch!
That was a mic drop.
That was a great,
Tim, what was your favorite?
Oh, God. I loved that hallway fight in the prison.
Mm-hmm.
When it's just like, because it was such the, it was a direct reflection of the hallway fight from the first
movie.
But the difference is Punisher is just mauling these guys.
Yeah
with that the shivs. And and everyone's on the ground half the time, including him.
And even they did a great job all over the place contrasting Daredevil and the Punisher, but that was such a beautiful, beautiful reflection of what came in the first season, showing you how different these two characters are. And even though he's just beaten the killing all these guys, there's still something really horrible about.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I have changed my answer because I'd forgotten until Tim mentioned that the part where Punisher is chained up in with the Irish, and he pulls that thin piece of metal out of his arm to do. Oh, that was because it was like we saw him doing some stuff to his arm when he was at home. We couldn't figure, so that was sick.
Also, I gotta say, because I can't pick just one scene; it's unfair. First episode, they've got all of the Irish getting together, and they're talking about how we're gonna own this city, and you're thinking, oh, all right, well, they're setting up a bad
guy
for the
guys.
Next season, then boom, all of them gone. They're all done.
So great.
And it's just like, oh, okay.
I think my favorite moment was the one you guys were talking about, where Matt Murdock shows up to prison to have his alter ego confrontation with Wilson Fisk, and when it's just like the second Kingpin goes, can you give us a moment, to his lawyer, and sends his lawyer out of the room, and then like all of a sudden Matt Murdock is face to face with the real Wilson Fisk, like only when
the
they're
Kingpin.
Alone
yep.
only when like, no one else is there, not even his lawyer is there to witness it, and he hauls him up in the air, and it's that whole like, I could have her sent away, she'd never be able to see her again for, you know, just the cost of a postage stamp, you know, $5 in shipping or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And Kingpin's like, and I don't even need to buy a postage stamp.
Yeah.
I loved that. And I also really, really liked, I've always been a big fan of Foggy being a competent lawyer and being a good guy and being smart and not like being the bumbling, like fat friend who's hopeless. I really liked the Foggy courtroom scenes. He was a great lawyer. It was interesting.
He was a good lawyer.
Stuff.
He lacks Matt's flash, but he's just as competent.
Yeah. I really like that.
Yeah, agreed.
So next is Luke Cage in September.
Yeah.
So get ready to binge that, and we'll do an episode about it. Mark, you ready for five questions?
Five questions!
Molly, do you want to start us off?
Yes, question number one. What is a movie you will stop and watch anytime it's on?
Jaws.
Ooh.
Always Jaws.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park is really close on this one, but there's just something about that giant rubber shark.
I just love Richard Dreyfuss.
Kind of, yeah.
He's pretty hot in that movie, I gotta say.
Everything Jaws!
Yeah.
Isn't he wearing, like, tiny blue 80s shorts?
He's wearing the shorts that every man wore in the summer in that time period.
It's really the full Canadian tuxedo for
sure.
Film.
I've got lots of pictures of my dad when he's, like, you know, 19, 20, 22 years old in, like, very short shorts.
Jaws is such a great example of a movie just scaring the shit out of you with without ever showing you what's scaring you.
Yeah. Yes.
It's this hidden enemy.
That the Alamo Drafthouse pool party drive-in thing. Have you heard about that?
Yeah.
Alamo Drafthouse doing a drive-in movie theater at a water park.
Yeah.
And so you go get an inner tube and you sit in your inner tube and watch Jaws floating in the water.
That's what we did when I went I knew I was gonna go to St. Kate's, but they had a, you know, prospective come see St. Kate's thing. And I had already applied and gotten accepted, but I went anyway. And that's what we did. They projected Jaws on the big white wall of the Nassatorium.
Uh-huh.
And we were all just swimming in the water, and I was scared shitless because I had been afraid of sharks in pools. since I saw Jaws as a kid, because there's that pool scene where everyone's having drinks and there's no shark. But like as a kid, I'm like, oh, that's where the shark's gonna come out. They're all gonna kill this pool party.
You know,
because that's how it works.
Yes. There's a scene in Sharknado where there are sharks in the pool.
See, like,
so that fear is not unfounded.
Well,
if there was ever a Sharknado.
My mom being like, sharks can't breathe chlorine. I was like, yet, that you know of.
Evolution, it can happen.
Yep.
Okay, question number two. What is your geekiest or most prized possession?
I have in my record collection an original British pressing, still sealed in plastic, of The Clash's London Calling.
That's awesome.
Complete without Train in Vain being listed on the back of it. It's only written on the label on the inside, I assume. I've never opened it.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Because someday you need to pay for your kids' college.
I doubt that one's ever going to get sold. It is definitely, like, of my record collection, the closest thing that comes to that is my original British pressing of Specials by The Specials. But
More like because someday different. His kid needs to feel like he doesn't matter as much as that record. He never drives it. He just wipes it with a diaper.
Dude, have you seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Exactly.
I'm concerned about what's going to happen to that record.
He's going to have to play it backwards. That's my dad gave me his still in the plastic. Some Girls.
Oh, nice.
The original one with the
where
haircuts
they used
of the
wig,
famous
where they
people.
Used the wig ad and then got sued for it.
Yeah, yeah. That's my, like, woo record. It's not on the same level, but it's something I have.
We were just talking about how we're not really music geeks, and it's not really hard,
And I found it, like, talking to a guy on eBay who was just like, yeah, I had a record store in, like, the 80s, but now I'm just kind of selling some stuff that had been in boxes since he closed it down. So I asked him what else he had, and he had all kinds of other early Clash records and a copy of Fresh Fruit for Rotten Vegetables.
Oh, wow.
Also sealed and never opened.
Oh, wow. That's
so
awesome.
I picked up all this stuff.
That was my
way
first record.
Cheaper than I should have.
Yeah.
Fresh Fruit, Rotten Vegetables was my first record. Question number three. What supernatural, magical, or all-powerful being do you wish was real?
So I would say the Celestials from Marvel.
Ooh.
Marvel Comics.
Well, as our Marvel expert, it's only fair that you would pick that.
It's
true. I went through a number of deities, but it's hard settling on one that would be beneficent for a long period of time, and I'd rather go with one that is likely to just ignore us after the fact.
That's what Nowhere is made out of a head of, right? Is
correct.
One of the Celestials? When they in Guardians of the Galaxy, when they go to Nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, the Celestials are kind of loose cannons when it comes to that sort of thing, but I mean, realistically, wouldn't you want your only deity to be out there to be a giant space robot, you know, imbued with the power of looking like a Jack Kirby drawing?
Mostly wants to make us alone.
I don't want that.
What's not to like?
Yeah, if I had to pick one.
Well, then we might get Eternals. And,
exactly.
And then we'd have Neil Gaiman characters brought to life.
I would love that. That sounds great. Maybe not despair.
See, now you're breaking your own rules, because whenever somebody like picks an X-Men character, you're like, well, yeah, but you then get all this stuff, and you're like, no, it just has to be this one character. Now we get the Celestials, like, well, if we got the Celestials,
we're in trouble. But the difference
I'm just
is
saying, Tim, Nick,
the Celestials create the Eternals. It's like saying, I wish the Christian God was real, because then we might get angels, because God creates the angels.
Question four. let's say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem that humanity now faces?
Self-interest.
Ooh.
Religion is kind of a very convenient way for us to convince ourselves to do the things that we want or that are best for us or our group of people. But I think maybe without religion, we might be able to focus on broader things, like what's good for all of us, as opposed to one particular segment. I just think it's...
So you think without religion, self-interest would be more of a problem? Because religion encourages us... religion encourages us to help, to look outside our...
It
encourages us to help our little group, and the problem is when it's gone, helping our bigger group be more...
Sure.
I think that struggle without having for at least some people, without having some sort of a grounding for that sort of thing, it might be hard to convince people to work outside of that. So
I get that.
Sure. All right. And finally, what is your favorite quote?
Well, there's a Mark Twain quote, supposedly, that I really like, but since I couldn't source it, I'm not going to really go with it because I don't trust it.
There are a lot of fake Mark Twain quotes out there.
And if the closest you can get is Mark Twain, a biography, it doesn't really help you at all. So I'm going to go with a song lyric that I've always just sort of liked that kind of speaks to me. The lyric is from a guy named Rhett Miller, who's the lead singer of the Old 97s.
Yeah.
The song is This Is What I Do, from I think his first solo record, and the line is just, everybody's got a secret rhythm beating like a drum.
I just, it's
always kind of spoken to me. It's just, you know, speaking to the underlying motivations that everybody has.
Rhett Miller is one of my favorite lyricists.
If you can find that rhythm and then produce the equivalent counter rhythm, you can shatter a person.
Yeah.
So, okay.
It's like knowing their true name.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you have the Mark Twain potential quote?
Yeah, I want to know what that quote is.
I want to know what it is.
So, under certain circumstances, profanity provides a relief denied even to prayer.
I like that.
Whoever said that, that's a good saying.
Yeah, that is a good saying.
I've had it for a long time, but when looking into these questions, I tried to look it up, and I couldn't find it.
We encourage your skepticism and sourcing. Thank you, Mark.
I give you lots of credit for
us. Yeah. I also give you as much credit as possible. Sounds great.
Yeah, so, wow.
Awesome. Thanks for your answers, Mark. Yeah. And thanks for swinging by to talk about Marvel Netflix again.
Netflix!
If you want to answer our five questions, you can send your answers to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. As you know, we recently did a live recording of our 200th episode of the Bryant Lake Bowl.
It was awesome.
It was awesome.
You'll be listening to that in a couple of weeks.
And this is after
our 200th episode? This goes up before.
This is going up.
It's going up before the 200th episode, but after we launch the thing that
we're
talking
about.
This
goes up a week from today. I think.
2 weeks from today.
This is very confusing for everyone.
I understand. I get it. So, to simplify things, when we recorded our 200th episode live, we announced our Geeks Without God Patreon. So if you want to swing by that page and check it out and consider supporting us, it's been over two years now, almost three. We haven't missed an episode yet, and we'd love to keep doing it.
For the rest of our lives and maybe even the next.
Yay. Almost four, actually.
I think it's been almost four.
It'll be four in July.
Yeah, because we started it in 2012.
Yeah.
Well, we'd love to go into five with some better audio equipment, maybe. Who knows?
If you guys could see our setup, you would laugh.
Maybe you've been listening to it for almost 200 episodes.
You probably know.
Yeah. So check that out at Patreon. We all have links on our Facebook and the geekswithoutgod.com page. You can follow us on Twitter. And please feel free to give us a rating on iTunes or check us out on Stitcher. Where we're relatively new still.
And if you missed your chance to get a Geeks Without God shirt or hoodie, we will probably put that up again sometime soon. So we'll let you know when that's going to happen, because we can always relaunch it. But for now, sorry, you probably should have done that.
Or congratulations on doing that.
You'll
be getting your shirt any day.
Yeah. Awesome. We've been Geeks Without God, and as usual, unless you're Matt Murdock, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Oh, too soon.
The Man Without Fear meets the guy with lots of guns and the ex with boundary issues.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
The one useful thing I did write in my notes here for later is stairwells greater than hallways. I want a t-shirt.